Welcome to the Quantum Connection Podcast. We are your hosts, Vanessa and Heather.
Join us as we explore the new quantum health paradigm.
Learn how to reconnect with nature to regain your health and to mitigate the impact of modern living.
As quantum health coaches and classical homeopaths, our mission is to inspire and motivate you on your healing journey.
This is for educational purposes only.
Let's dive into today's show.
Welcome back to the Quantum Connection Podcast. We are so excited you're here for another fantastic episode. I'm your host, Vanessa Baldwin, with my co-host, Heather Crimson.
Hello.
We have an exciting topic today. We're going to talk all about fasting. We're going to talk about the dangers and the benefits, right? Because fasting is a stressor to our body. So there's always a positive and a negative to it, right? And depending on where your body's at, whether or not it can be too stressful or whether or not it could be really a good thing. So I think it's really fun to talk about this and talk about the nuances of this topic a little bit. And we also want to remind you to, you know, check us out on YouTube if you like as well. My YouTube channel is Bright Light Wellness and Heather's is Enlightened Mood. And if you're enjoying the podcast, we'd love it if you would rate and review. Written reviews really help the podcast grow. So we'd really appreciate it if you write us one. And I'm excited to talk about fasting with you, Heather.
Absolutely. Yes. Leave us up to a 5-star review, everyone. We would greatly appreciate it. So if you find any of this information useful. So just to start us off, Vanessa, fasting is kind of a dirty word sometimes, right? Like, oh, why would you purposely deprive yourself of food? Like, who would do that? Isn't that seem like punishment or deprivation or actually literally dangerous? But the truth is that fasting in various forms therapeutically has existed since time immemorial, right? Since healthcare started and has been used by some of the legendary, you know, of antiquity, the doctors or whatever you call them before, healers, they would use fasting. And so they knew that giving the body a rest from having to process food, especially if you have some kind of issues going on, the body's already, all of its resources are being used up in other ways to fight off infection or disease or what have you, that fasting can really be helpful. But now that we have a lot more science around it and a lot more, and plus our modern day lifestyle could also come into play here. And certainly the information that we've had about mitochondrial function and hormones and all those things have added into our knowledge base. So we're going to give you sort of the updated version about fasting. And just to kind of also put this in there, Vanessa, that it's not medical advice. Like, we are not saying you should go out and try any of this stuff. You need to consult with whomever your healthcare provider is, a coach, a doctor, any person who's the one who's guiding you, because we're not doing that here. We're just giving you information. This is really for information and entertainment purposes only.
Yes, 100%. Please always consult your medical, you know, professionals or your coaches, health coaches, or whether or not, you know, what you're going to do. And really, we're going to talk about fasting and how to do it. And also, it's not something you should absolutely, definitely not jump into. Like, don't be like, don't listen to this podcast and be like, ooh, they said fasting has benefits. I'm going to go do a 3-day water fast. Please don't do that. That's really a bad idea, actually, because your body really has to adapt to these changes. And it really depends on your metabolic flexibility and what you've been consuming recently and, you know, all the things. So don't do that. But yeah, you know, I think it's funny to talk about what the word breakfast actually means.
Yeah.
You know, it actually means break fast. Like, that's the term that it means. It's actually to break your fast, right?
And no one thinks of it like that.
No, but that's the word. That's what I mean. Break fast. Like, you, so that actually means that at night, what should you be doing?
Fasting.
You should be fasting. You shouldn't be eating. So like normal fasting, which is not really fasting, but like normal, like eating patterns are, we don't eat at night and we break our fast in the morning. That's just like normal eating patterns. That's the way we should be eating. So we're not meant to eat at night, late into the night, in the middle of the night. And these things can be really harmful to your health, actually. So definitely not something we recommend, but yeah, it means to break the fast from the overnight of fasting that you had. That's your breakfast is for, right?
Well, I think that's one of the hardest things, Vanessa, because when we're coming from a circadian health perspective, it really means not eating after sunset. And for most people, this is going to be very challenging and difficult and kind of also antisocial in the sense that, well, that's the time I have with my family. I mean, hopefully people are sitting down and actually eating with other people in a calm manner, But, you know, in a lot of countries, I always wonder, like in Spain or even in Mexico, they're eating really late at 10 or 11. And I'm thinking, good grief, how do these people actually digest their food and how do they sleep well? And what's that all about? So I'm not saying that people need to, you know, cultures need to change. I'm just saying that if you really want to harmonize with your body's rhythms and have a healthy circadian function, when we say nighttime, we are literally meaning after dark. Now, that's maybe not for everyone, but it certainly has worked the best for me.
Oh, yeah, 100%. I don't eat after sunset, you know? And of course, there's a seasonality rhythm to that, right? So in wintertime, my fasting window is a lot longer because it gets dark here like 4 o'clock, sometimes 3:30 where I live. So yeah, I don't eat after sunset. And then it's a much longer fasting window, right? And then in summertime, there's definitely a little bit more leeway to that. But actually, it's been really helpful for my digestion, my overall sleep, all the things. Like I just feel so much better when I don't eat late into the night. So and the rare occasion that I do, because I'm a normal human being that of course, you know, I mean, we have some flexibility with things, right? I don't feel as good. So I tend not to do it, you know? So it's a rare thing that I do 100%. But
well, so, what's the cause of that? What happens if you eat too late? People might be wondering, what is the big deal? Like, how does it even matter? Well, when mm-hmm. it's dark, then the absence of light, because ideally you're blocking artificial light at night. You're not getting all these awful LED. It's like a white hued, all blue light. Dominant, even though it doesn't look blue, it is. It's white, blue. And that comes into your eyes and it signals to your brain and body that it's daytime, right? Mm-hmm. So you're not going to have the upregulation of melatonin that you need. So mm-hmm. everything gets all mixed up and confused. And then when you eat, it's signaling to your body that, oh, it's daytime because we're eating. Like the body doesn't know what's going on. And then your body is trying to digest food even when it's not able to do that effectively, because that's not where its main focus wants to be. So then you're not going to be performing autophagy and apoptosis effectively because the energy is going somewhere else.
Right, because that's not what your body's supposed to be doing at that time. The body's supposed to be repairing, regenerating, all those things like the autophagy and apoptosis. But now we fed it, so now it's going to work on digestion and all those other things. So it's doing the wrong thing at the wrong time, and then your body's like in haywire mode. And actually, even eating, obviously eating after night is going to raise cortisol. And when you raise cortisol, you suppress melatonin every time. So I mean, if you're eating carbohydrates, it's especially going to raise cortisol. If you're eating something that's more of a fat protein, that's going to be less of an effect. But I still think then you have the body has to process and digest those foods, and that's still interfering with that whole rest and repair situation that's supposed to happen at night. So definitely if you're eating carbohydrates at night, that is going to absolutely spike the cortisol even further and suppress the melatonin. Because they're opposing hormones. So anytime you spike cortisol from artificial blue light, from eating at night, this is going to suppress melatonin levels. So yeah, we definitely don't want to be doing that. So I don't know. I don't know about you, but I'd love to share our experiences. Like, honestly, I think fasting has a ton of benefits and it can be a really supportive tool to use while healing. But I do think that even fasting can be overdone and be too stressful on the body, and it can chronically elevate cortisol. And I think especially for women are more sensitive to this than men. So I think that there is definitely some nuance between men and women when it comes to fasting. Mm-hmm. And honestly, I think we have to remember that fasting is a stressor, right? Yep. And then a lot of times we're adding in, okay, the fasted workouts on the daily regular. And then we're adding in the job stress and the family stress and the relationship stress and the stress from the non-native EMFs in our environment and the stress from the artificial lights. And then we throw in a cold plunge and it's like stress upon stress upon stress upon stress. And it's like, sometimes these kinds of things we can just overdo it. It can be too much. And for me, that definitely happened. I was, you know, chronically ill, and you hear about all the benefits of fasting, right? I want to get the autophagy. I want to get the apoptosis. I want to, you know, regenerate my cell lining in 3 days, right? Like they say, like, and I had done, I was working up to it. Like I was doing intermittent fasting like previously before doing this, but then I noticed, you know, I was really shortening my eating window for a long period of time. And then I did a 7-day bone broth fast. So for 7 days, I drank nothing but bone broth. That was fun. Not really.
And then I went straight into a carnivore diet, right? So that was like that was what I did. I went from intermittent fasting to bone broth fast for 7 days, then to a carnivore diet, which was pretty intermittent fasting also, right? Because I'm like, okay, didn't eat till 12. And then I was eating like two meals a day and stopped eating early. So I was really, really restricting a lot. And what happened to me? I lost my period and I couldn't get it back for like 6 months.
Which is bad news.
Oh yeah, because my hormones went down, right? I totally depleted them all because I was running on chronic cortisol. There's this thing called pregnenolone steal syndrome, right? So your pregnenolone actually is, you know, this master hormone that helps make the rest of the hormones. And it can go either one pathway. It could go to your, you know, when you get the light into your eyes and you make your hormones from cortisol and light, basically it can make a decision. It's either going to make cortisol or it's going to make pregnenolone. And obviously I was just making cortisol and making no pregnenolone, which will make the rest of the other hormones. Mm-hmm. So I'm pretty sure that's what happened. So my body just was in this, you know, state of feeling really unsafe, really feeling really in a bad state. Vanessa doesn't have enough food. We have to, you know, hunt. We have to, you know, figure out what to do here. So I think that's pretty much what happened. And
smart. It doesn't make mistakes. It's like, we don't have enough safety to procreate right now. All of our resources, all that pregnenolone is going to be turned into stress hormones to manage the stress. We don't have the capacity right now to procreate. We're not going to convert the pregnenolone into the sex hormones. It's going to become stress hormones. So that's the problem. And I just want to add in here, as far as stress goes, Vanessa, that there's a huge, huge psychological component to fasting, because I think some people start to get, you know, they start to get a little, well, this is speaking for myself, really, you know, it's a psychological thing. If you are thinking this is going to be hard, oh my gosh, what am I going to do? How am I going to feel, right? It's a lot of mental stuff sometimes for people who might have even issues with food and eating, like I have, and I still have some that I'm working through. It's from trauma and whatnot. So it's like, there's the additional layer of the mental stress and the mindset that really can exacerbate whatever your physiological, because there's this interplay, right, between your thoughts and then the emotions and the feelings come, the sensations in your body, and then your hunger, and then you're freaking out about it. So all of that kind of compounds upon those who are these sort of biohackers who are doing the cold plunging, and then they're doing the sauna, and they're doing all the exercising and whatnot. So you got stressor upon stressor, like you said, which is really going to counteract, or what's the right word I'm looking for? It's kind of like, what's the point? You're fasting for health, but now you have all these stressors, right? It's not really working. It's backfiring.
Exactly. It will backfire. And that's exactly what happened to me. I had to do the opposite to try and fix my hormones, right? Like I was like, oh man, now I'm going to have to make sure I eat at regular times and I can't do any fasting. I had to quit all of that because I had to give my body more safety signals. And that's when I actually found, that was right around the same time when I found like Sunrise and Circadian Health, which actually helped with a lot of that. So that was really, really a, you know, supportive thing. And then I learned how to actually appropriate fast, right? I was like, or at least fast for me, that was working. You know what I mean? Because for me, I'm very sensitive on the hormonal sphere. So the total absence of carbohydrates for my body doesn't work. My body doesn't like that, actually. My body wants some carbohydrates, some seasonal carbohydrates in it, because it actually feels more stressed when I don't get it. So it's about that balance. And when it comes to fasting, there's absolutely a lot of nuance and you have to find what works for you. So 100%, you have to play around with it. But definitely losing your period is a huge sign, right? That this is not working. So then it woke me up to saying, okay, I've got to make some changes here. But yeah, I think it's just really about the timing with fasting. Like a safe fast is an intermittent fast, as they call it, right? So having that longer fast over the night, eating with the rhythm of the sun, only eating when the sun is out, you know, breaking your fast, you know, around sunrise time and not eating after sunset. This is a very safe thing to do, intermittent fasting. That is a safe way. And maybe that's not technically a fast because a fast is 24 hours. That's kind of like the normal kind of eating schedule we should have, right? Like we said,
to change the word for breakfast now, because we're not really breaking a fast. We're just doing the normal thing that our body wants to do.
Right. But I honestly think that's a safe way to go though. If you're starting, you're hearing this podcast, you're like, ooh, there's some benefits to fasting, which there are, right? There's definitely health benefits to it. Right. It can really alleviate lots of chronic issues, right? For people. You hear all kinds of miracle cures from long, long fasting. But you can't just jump into doing like those longer fasting. So if you want to start like easing your body into it, and you're kind of like the kind of person who eats at night, just start that. Start with eating, you know, with the rhythm of the sun, have breakfast and then stop at sunset. That's a safe way to actually approach this, right? Mm-hmm. And it will support your circadian biology hugely, you know, mm-hmm. and you'll give your body that the rest and digest it needs. Your digestive system will repair while you're sleeping. Like, that's all going to be a ton of benefit for you.
Yeah. And so you're synchronizing and harmonizing with the seasonality, with what's happening in your natural environment. So in the winter, which is, you know, hard for people because that's when they want to stay up and do the socializing. So there's going to be a lot of parties and this and that and more sugar. And it's really, I think, a dangerous time of year for our bodies because you're not getting the extra rest you need because you should be sleeping more and resting more in the darkness, taking advantage of that, mm-hmm. right? That's how you're going to be synchronizing. And then you have more melatonin because it's dark more, you should have more melatonin for longer, which means you're going to do deeper cleaning and restoration, body repair. And that's what winter is, right? Winter is supposed to be a time of not full on hibernation like bears, but we're supposed to be going into that mode. Absolutely. And what do? We push ourselves. We run ourselves ragged. We're up late. We're eating tons of refined sugar, which is horrible. And you're not doing anything that you should be doing because you should be, when you're resting more, you should be fasting during that time. So it shouldn't be harder because you're getting that rest. Mm-hmm. And then you aren't as stressed out ideally, right? Because you're taking that time downtime. So you should be able to handle the longer eating window or non-eating window, I should say, right? Between darkness and the morning meal. But we're doing the opposite. And I think this is one of the hardest things for people, Vanessa, because it's like, well, how am I? I'm not going to miss out on all the things. It's not that you have to miss out on all the things, but just kind of know your body and really sense into what your body needs and don't try to push it beyond what it's actually telling you. Because I truly believe I've been doing the circadian for 7 years now, circadian lifestyle. My body will tell me, time for bed, Heather. No, you're not going to stay up and pay another bill or do anything. You're going to go put yourself in bed and you're not eating. It tells you.
Yeah, 100%. It definitely does. It definitely does. The body is wise and will let you know what it needs. And we just have to listen to its cues. But yeah, I tend to look at like, when I first learned about circadian biology, I was like, oh, summertime is the time to heal, right? Because I've got all this light. I've got all the sunlight, right? And we have a good podcast about winter being, how to use winter as a healing modality or healing season or something. But winter is really a really great time to heal also, because if you honor all the darkness, you will make more melatonin and you will get more autophagy and apoptosis, and you honor the resting cycle really. Like, winter is also supposed to be more of a resting phase, you know. It's, and we make it stressful with the holidays and the go, 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 and the this and the that and that party. Like, it's, we make it more stressful, but honestly, that's not what winter is supposed to be. Winter is supposed to be rest, slow down time, you know, repair mode, restorative, like all of that. And not our modern society just doesn't honor any of that seasonality that we have. Naturally, like we said before, your fasting window would be longer in the winter just due to the less light, and you would have more repair in the winter, right? So that would naturally happen, you know?
In summertime, you get to take advantage of the longer light window, the longer days, and then there's more UVB light, depending on where you live, the degree of it, then you can afford to eat more carbohydrates because that'll help process the deuterium in the foods that are carbs, and you have more energy, and you get energy, more energy from the sunlight because you're usually out more, more skin exposed, right? Mm-hmm. And you can eat a little bit later because the sun's out, sun is shining later and it doesn't set as early. So that's really kind of fun, actually. That's when you need to be. Right? Yeah. Doing your gardening.
No, it is fun. Summertime is more fun when you live a circadian biology lifestyle. Let's just be honest, right? Because it's, you know, you're outside in the sunshine more, you're grounding, you're getting all the electrons from the earthing, and you're getting all the electrons sunbathing. From the sun. Yeah. You're sunbathing all the time. There's all these yummy, juicy fruits around. It's like, ooh, it's like a party. And your body can handle those things because that's when we're supposed to eat them. The liver, you know, the sunlight will deplete the glucose from the liver, you know, deplete the deuterium levels in those fruits, and, you know, the UVB light will remind the body of the different beneficial bacteria that the gut microbiome needs to make, so to help process all of that. So there's many reasons why we're able to process those more carbohydrates in the summertime. And honestly, that's when your cortisol really should be higher, right? We've talked about this. Cortisol should be higher in the summertime than it is in the winter. Winter is more melatonin. Summer is going to be more cortisol, right? Because that's just natural. Because the blue light is what determines the cortisol, right? So the stronger blue light, the more cortisol your body is going to make, which, again, is not bad. Cortisol is not bad. It's only bad when it's dysregulated or when we're activating it at the wrong time. So cortisol is actually really good for us. It helps us have energy. It helps us have better cognition. It helps us, you know, get up and go and, you know, just have energy to flow through our day. So actually cortisol is good. It's just when it becomes dysregulated is when it becomes a problem for us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So chronic stress leads to dysregulated cortisol. Artificial blue light can lead to dysregulated cortisol. Lots of things can lead to it. And what are the signs of it and symptoms, right? When you have rapid weight gain, like in your face, chest and abdomen, especially flushed and round face, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, skin changes, like with bruising and purple stretch marks, muscle weakness, mood swings, like especially, you know, irritability, anxiety and depression, and then increased thirst and in having to go to the bathroom or more urination.
Yeah, absolutely. These are all signs of dysregulated cortisol patterns that we need to watch out for. And honestly, if you feel like your cortisols are really dysregulated, you're seeing this, definitely need to start implementing circadian biology, lifestyle practices and principles, and really get your rhythms online. And fasting may not be for you. Like if your cortisol patterns are dysregulated, longer fastings might cause you to be more stressed, right? And then higher cortisol for a long period of time then causes lack of sex drive, you know, obviously, because again, you're not making the sex hormones, you're making the cortisol, right? With periods can become irregular, less frequent, and stop altogether, like what happened to me. So, you know, this is what we have to watch out for. So if you're having these signs of dysregulated cortisol, we want to definitely, you know, be aware that maybe fasting is not for you and you have some other things to do first, like getting that morning sunlight in your eyes, which will help regulate cortisol, you know, and being outside in the sunlight throughout the day and blocking the artificial light at night, all of these things that we've said before. These will all really support cortisol levels. And then trying to do things to reduce your stress, whatever that is that works for you. Again, this is nuance and you have to figure out what works for you. You know, whether it's laying in the sun or getting in some more grounding or doing a meditation or singing or dancing or EFT tapping or seeing a therapist, whatever helps you, you know, regulate these bring down your stress level and bring down your cortisol level. You have to kind of figure that out for you, but it's definitely important to support it if you're seeing these, you know, the signs for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And so we have the stress hormones and then we also have the other sexual hormones, right? And then the thyroid hormones, and there can be, those can create metabolic disorders and hormonal imbalances. So those can manifest as slow heartbeat, rapid heartbeat, also unexpected weight gain, right? Fatigue, diarrhea, constipation, numbness or tingling in your hands, higher than normal blood cholesterol levels. I've had that before. Mm-hmm. Depression, anxiety, being unable to tolerate cold temperatures or warm. That's pretty common. I had that. I had a terrible, terrible time most of my menstruating years with just feeling really cold, cold hands and feet. I don't have that anymore, but that was awful. Dry skin, hair, thin, warm, moist skin or skin tags. Irregular body fat distribution, darkened skin in the armpits or on the back or sides of your neck, and extreme thirst and also frequent urination.
Yeah. So these are all the thyroids, right? It's whether the body's going hyper or hypothyroidism, right? So the hyperthyroidism is the rapid heartbeat and the hypo is the slow heartbeat. The weight gain is the hypothyroid and the weight loss is the hyperthyroid, right? So the constipation is the hypothyroid. So these are, you know, you can see the body is trying to regulate. So I have Hashimoto's. So for me, the body will, I mean, maybe I do, maybe I don't. I don't know. I haven't had my thyroid tested in a long time. I probably should. But I don't really want to associate myself with diagnoses, but that I've been labeled as that, right? Yeah. But the body with Hashimoto's, it does this annoying thing because it's an autoimmune condition where it it kind of like goes back and forth, right? It's like one day you feel hyper and one day you feel hypo because the body is like trying to find that balance, you know? So I've definitely experienced many of these and still working on some, honestly, you know, to kind of get my thyroid back to where it belongs. But yeah, I've been able to avoid medications for now, at least. And yeah, it's definitely, if you're seeing a thyroid issue again, I would be cautious on fasting if you're a woman, you know, especially, or even a male, because we can downregulate the metabolism and the thyroid and all the things by calorie restricting, chronic fasting, even for some, not having carbohydrates, you know, for a long period of time. All of these things can downregulate the body's metabolism. Then everything's working slower to more towards the hypothyroidism. So we do have to be kind of careful, you know? So it's very nuanced, all of this, really, this fasting conversation. It's very, very nuanced and very individualized, you know, of what people are able to tolerate and handle. And you really have to get to know your body before you make any decisions on this.
Mm-hmm. That's why if you're going to do anything outside of just not eating after dark until breakfast, you should be working with somebody, because it's, you know, especially if you have a, you know, complicated health picture or longstanding chronic issues, you just don't want to jump into this. So it's important to educate yourself and have an expert guiding you. I did read the entire book by Dr. Jason Fung, F-U-N-G, and I have to just give kudos to him because, you know, an MD who, well, his specialty is nephrology. And so working with people with kidney issues, then he went into diabetes and obesity and whatnot. He does a fabulous job. Of course, he got a lot of crap from the centralized medicine and allopathic medicine because, right, this is free. Fasting is free. It's not, it costs you literally nothing. And there's no pills required. And so he got a lot of heat for it, but his book is really good. I forget what's called, The Complete Guide to Fasting, I think it's called, Dr. Jason Fung. If you want to read more about it, I do recommend that book because it's just really well done. And he knows what he's doing. It's not circadian. I have to say he has one paragraph in there about circadian. That's okay. Cause that's not his background, but it will help you insofar as understanding some of the things we've been talking about, like hormonally regarding fasting. And then he just breaks it all down in some other biochemical terms, but there's some really good resources out there. But we're just going to give you some general guidelines, some general fasting tips for those who want to start off gently and very, you know, cautiously. We would say, as we've been saying throughout this podcast, Vanessa and I, is you want to turn it around. Most people, like Vanessa said, want to skip breakfast. And that's really, if you have health issues, that's really risky because you need to signal daylight to your body and eat within an hour of sunrise, and especially a decent amount of animal protein, not powders, real food. And that helps set your circadian rhythm. It helps to get your leptin regulated and balanced. And so you want to be doing that. So the ideal starting place is to stop eating after sunset, or at least 4 hours before bed, which, and again, like I was saying earlier on the podcast, it's sometimes psychologically harder to do that than physiologically. Your body will probably be fine with it, right? It's a psychological piece that can get in people's way. So I would say focus on something that feels nourishing, like writing or coloring or reading or just, you know, talking with friends, but don't think about, you know, dessert and all the things. Cause I think for people who have carbohydrate addiction, which that's a whole nother, you know, deal, it can be really stressful in the evenings to not eat anything, especially not having your snack or sugary or whatever, fruit, even fruit, right? So that can be stressful. So nighttime is for calm, quiet, dark, and, you know, doing things that make you feel good so that you don't think about food.
Yeah. I think eating enough protein can be a really supportive tip for this in general, because if you eat enough protein, you're going to feel more satiated and then you're going to have less carb cravings as well. So I would add that in as a good tip. If you're not the kind of person who's used to eating, not the type of person who's you're used to eating at night, this might help. If you're eating more things that are more, you know, real whole foods, you know, animal proteins, animal fats, these are really going to support the body and letting it feel more satiated. And then you can do carbohydrates, of course, seasonally appropriate and more whole food context all of that will help, you know, make this easier, I would say. But I try not to eat 4 hours before bed, even in the summertime, to be honest, you know, and I go to bed a little bit later in the summertime for sure. It's more like, you know, 9:30, 10 o'clock kind of time. That's late. That's late for me. Super late. But yeah, I still try to eat 4 hours before bed, you know, so I try not to eat. I give my body at least that 4 hours of time. So again, that's where the body can really have that time to, you know, digest its food, be done with that, and then repairing overnight, you know, and eating the breakfast around sunrise time. That's so important for our, because food is another Zeitgeber. Food is another timekeeper, right? It's a secondary one. Light is number one, but food is a secondary one. So it helps. And if you fast in the morning, what happens is, so say you're like one of those kind of people who, and I've had clients with this and I've helped them big time. So if you're the kind of person who's like, yeah, I've been used to doing the OMAD, right? The one meal a day, or I eat at 12 o'clock. I don't feel hungry in the morning. Not feeling hungry in the morning is a sign that your leptin is dysregulated, number one. Okay.
Right. It should be informing you that you're hungry in the morning.
Yeah, 100%. So a lot of people will say, I don't feel hungry in the morning. So that we need to fix that with light, number one, and then the meal timing. So then what I was going to say is, oh, if you skip breakfast, what happens is the adrenals are going to pump out an excess amount of cortisol again, because they are stressed and they feel like, oh my God, there is no food around. Why didn't Vanessa eat? She must need more energy to go hunt for the lion that she's supposed to eat, or whatever. Not really a lion, but she's supposed to, that's what cortisol's job is. It's going to help you find food if you were in food scarcity. So if you especially chronically do that, you are down regulating your metabolism and down regulating your leptin again, but you're also then stressing your body, and the adrenals are sending out more cortisol, right? So we don't really want to be doing this, especially on a regular basis. It's better to give your body that safety signal of that food in the morning. I always recommend a protein and fat breakfast in the morning. That is really the best way to go, because again, the carbohydrates early in the morning can also be also taxing on the adrenals and stress them out, because your body can't really process that right at that time. So yeah, mm-hmm. Definitely don't want to skip it.
Which was what the traditional breakfast foods are. I mean, I think in the summer, if you're super healthy, you can get away with a little bit of carbs in the morning. Maybe it's mm-hmm. fruits or not, but eating only carbs is definitely a problem.
Yeah. And always protein before carbs, proteins and fats before carbs. So your body will better digest the carbs if you've already eaten some proteins and fats, and then your body will be able to handle that better. But carbohydrates on their own, that will really spike things. You spike your cortisol really high. Yeah. Now, if you're going to do some longer fast, which are these, like, we recommend like the breakfast to breakfast fasts. If you're like, okay, I'm pretty good at intermittent fasting. I've got that down. I'm already doing like the sunrise breakfast, and then I don't eat after sunset. The longer fasts are that 24-hour fast. Like, so more like a breakfast to breakfast. And I wouldn't recommend that too often. I mean, maximum once a week would be, and that would be a lot still, I feel like. So I would be, you'd be cautious of that. But yeah, I would say once a week is okay at the maximum. And that's just your 20. Then you're getting that full 24-hour fast. So you'd eat at breakfast time, then you would skip lunch, you would skip dinner, and then you wouldn't eat again until the breakfast time the next morning. You could also do just a very earlier lunch, like a 12 o'clock lunch, and then skip that dinner. That's still going to get you a little bit longer of a fast to help your body get used to it. And then I think if you're a woman and you're listening to this, fasting around ovulation or the days before your period is due is, you know, if you're still menstruating, I wouldn't recommend that. I would be careful and cautious about fasting around ovulation or around your period, because this can cause more dysregulation. Your body needs a little bit more, especially right before your period. Your body needs a little bit more nutrition, and even sometimes through the period. It really, this again is more nuanced topic. Like, it depends on the person, but even through the period, you know, your body might need a little bit more support and energy, because when we have a period, that's actually a detox that we go through every month. That's actually what you're doing. And again, that can be a lot and hard on the system. So some people, a fast during that time could even be stressful. So the best times to fast are really, really more the follicular phase, and then like an early part of the luteal phase, you know. So it is kind of a nuanced topic of what's good for your body. And you really have to play with it to feel like, does this work for me? Do I feel good? That kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, another great tip is if you want to do the longer fasting, is to eat more kind of more ketogenic before, or at least, you know, a couple days before, because that does really support the fasting. I find for myself when I do a fast, if my body's already making ketones and already getting into ketosis a little bit, then the fast is a lot easier because your body's already burning fat for fuel or ketones for fuel. So what that would look like is that you, the days before you're, say you're deciding you're going to do a fast on Friday. Well, the couple days before Friday, you're going to make sure you're really more restricting carbohydrates to say like maybe like 20 grams a day. You're keeping it pretty low. And then you're able to, your body will hopefully make ketones and you'll be able to get into that. But that's a really important tip, because it can be a lot easier if your body's already burning fat for fuel than having to go from just, I'm just burning glucose, all of a sudden now I've got nothing. And it doesn't, it's a lot harder. So it's a lot easier if you do that.
So it's going to bring on the keto flu. You're going to get really cranky. You're going to feel really weak. You're going to feel awful. So you want to titrate down, or slowly, you know, bring down the carbs so your body has a chance to flip the switch from glucose to ketones. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it's just too stressful.
Yeah, 100%. And then obviously, like, longer fasting would be more appropriate in wintertime, because that's when it makes more sense. Summer and fall are really the theme is abundance, right? Of, if you're following a circadian lifestyle, those are the seasons of summer. Summer and fall are the seasons of abundance, right? We have all the harvest, we have all the foods, we have all the fruits. You know, that's not really as an appropriate time. But winter is more of that season of scarcity. So it's definitely more of an appropriate time for longer fasting. So if and when you play around with it, that might be the time to really play around with it more. And you're eating less carbohydrates. If you live in a northern latitude and you're following a seasonal diet, you're going to already be eating less carbohydrates. So then the fasting is easier for your body, because your body's probably running on ketones majority, like a lot of the time in the winter. Like, it just normally happens, because I know that happens to me. It naturally happens in my body because I'm not eating a lot of carbohydrates. This is not really available in the winter. There's really basically nothing here. You know, it's basically meat and eggs and raw dairy and mm-hmm. a couple of tubers here and there that you know what I mean? It's very limited. So,
and the dairy is kind of like not a luxury, but a bonus, because in the olden days, the animals, they're not milking in the winter. So that's a modern thing. So luckily we have really high quality dairy in the winter, but normally that wouldn't be the case, right?
Yeah. Some people who eat seasonal will say that you shouldn't even have dairy in the winter because it doesn't actually make sense, really. I don't take it that far, but you know.
I know. Well, that's like pretty hardcore, I have to say.
It is hardcore. Like, so then for me, it would just literally be carnivore on meat. And then like a couple tubers here and there.
Squash that you can.
It would be pretty limited though.
I know.
I like a little raw dairy because I feel like it's really good for the digestive enzymes in there. And I don't know, I feel better with it. So that's why I keep it in my diet too. So again, it's listening to your body and knowing what works for you is really important as well.
Yeah.
You know?
So what do you do at the end of this non-eating window is you do need to break your fast with a really good meal. Some people, depending on how long you've been fasting, you start off with a little bit of meat. You know, you want to take it easy. You don't want to disgorge yourself, because you have to help your stomach wake up and get everything back online and make sure your digestive juices are flowing. So then you do want to eat a hearty meal though, because you want to tell your body now, you know, the fast is over. We were hunting, so to speak, we have a kill, and now we're going to really replenish. Right. So that's actually what contributes to metabolic flexibility, is you can tolerate not eating for a little while, and then you can have a good meal and do just fine with it. You should be able to have that kind of metabolic flexibility.
Yes, absolutely. You have to refuel appropriately. I feel like some people don't do this. So what happens is, yes, I love that way you ease it into it. Like, some people ease in with bone broth, some people like bone broth and butter, or like some like scrambled eggs or something. But say you've done like a 3-day fast, so you say you were ready for that, and then that's 3 days you didn't eat. You need to actually like eat some food, like remind your, like, your body needs nutrients like that it's been deprived of for a couple of days, right? So yeah, you've got to really, really eat. And I think some people just like, they go back to eating like their regular, and it's like they didn't give their body, they didn't replenish, right? So we definitely want to do that. And then, like, you know, if you're doing a fast and you really want to get into autophagy and apoptosis and all the things, you have to block artificial light, especially at night. Because I'll never forget it when I was doing carnivore and I was like testing my ketones, my blood sugar. I'd be like, at night, I'd be like, why is my blood sugar so high? Well, because I wasn't blocking artificial light at night. So this is a problem, you know, and then you're not going to get that autophagy and apoptosis and that cellular repair. And you're putting in all this hard work to fast and then you're totally missing that point. It's really important. Like, be off the tech. If you're doing a fast, be off the technology. Stay away from that. Keep it super low stress. And artificial light is a stressor and it raises our cortisol and our blood sugar. So keep it really, really low stress, really, you know. You're already putting your body in a stressful situation by doing a longer fast. So then you need to be as restorative as you can. I don't know, lay in the grass for the day. I don't know.
Well, that's a good idea. Actually, you should be doing a lot of grounding.
Oh, yeah. Tons
of it. Plenty of rest. Take a nap if you need to. Make sure that you've planned it out so there's nothing stressful that's going to be happening or you're not extra demands on your body. Some people do fast when they're traveling, for example, because it is harder on your, it's so stressful to travel for your body. And then you're not trying to digest food. My health isn't quite as robust to be able to do that. Maybe in the future, I'd like to be able to do that because it'd be so much easier. Because the, you know, let's be honest, the food in the airports is disgusting. It's hard to find anything decent. And otherwise you have to lug a whole case just for your food with you. So it'd be great to fast, but you have to really think about what are you going to be doing, what's going to be coming up in your life. And I like to actually plan it out. Like, this would be a great time for me to do like a 3-day water fast, or I've done raw milk fast. Like, there's different variations of fast. I mean, it's not a true fast. A water fast is a true fast. And then there's some people who do like no water, which I think that freaks me out. A dry fast. And that's really only people do that for 2 days. Cause that's a like really kind of more intense. I've never even thought about doing that, but you want to really plan it out so that you can actually just down, like everything is kind of, your whole stress level's down. You're having a chance to kind of be calm, and this may not be possible for you, right? It may not be realistic that you're just going to carve out this time and have the luxury of doing that, but there's ways to make things happen. If your health is such that you realize that your body could need that rest. Cause if you have a lot of gut issues, it can be very helpful to give your gut a rest, you know, once a month, do a 24-hour fast or maybe two. It can be so helpful to just get that inflammation down if your gut gets irritated by a lot of things because you have irritable bowel or you have, you know, you react to everything. That's when I think people can benefit a little more from having a water fast or a raw milk fast or whatever you want to call it, a bone broth fast, whatever it is that you, you know, resonate with. So that's what I would recommend for people to do, because it's just otherwise, you know, with your mitochondrial function, you're not going to be able to create the energy you need to be able to sustain yourself, and you kind of can crash if your hormones are too out of balance, right? So you have to start slowly and really help your body to get energy other ways by like earthing and grounding, by gentle walking, by, you know, whatever it is you need to do to get that energy. So your body has the energy it needs to work by getting sunlight. So, so important.
Yeah, because your body can make energy from other ways besides food. Like,
yes, just exactly. Right.
Sunlight, earthing, and movement are all other ways that your body can actually make energy. Definitely don't go for like a fasted run, though. Like, when you're on a fast, like, don't do that. Like, that's not what I mean. But gentle movement, like Heather said, you know, getting in that earthing and that sunlight can actually make a huge difference. And I love the idea of a raw milk fast. These are cool ideas. Like, I've done water fasting. I've done a few days of water fasting. I've never done a dry fast. That does freak me out a little bit. Cause I'm thirsty. So then I don't want to always just totally diminish all my body's like natural cues, I guess. And I've done the bone broth fast, but the bone broth I like too. And the raw milk I like as well, because you're giving your body, you know, not a ton of calories, but it's very restricted. Right. But then you're also getting some good minerals and some beneficial bacteria in the raw milk, and really the mineral support that it needs to get through this. Drink good quality water too, if you are doing a water fast that has good minerals in it as well. And I would say also, like, maybe you plan a fast. You're like, all right, I've been doing this, you know, I've been doing this circadian lifestyle. I've been doing all the things. I've been doing, you know, I tried a couple 24-hour fasts and they went really well. And you're like, I'm ready for a 3-day fast. And you plan it all out. And you're like, and then all of a sudden, like, something comes up that's super stressful. We'll skip it. Or if you're in the middle of your fast, right, and a stressful situation comes up, well, then maybe you should stop the fast. It's okay. Or if you notice symptoms like you're super dizzy, or you're, you know what I mean? Like, this means you're like, because my blood sugar can get really low sometimes when I've done fasting, you know, and the signs of that are like feeling really dizzy for me sometimes. I mean, that's not so much as more dizzy. I haven't had that in a long time, but it used to happen a lot. So you have to be aware, you know. If something comes up, is my point. You get a really bad headache, you know, or like things are coming up and you're just not feeling well. Don't be afraid to be like, all right, that's okay. I'll try it again next time and stop the fast because, you know, again, it can be just too much for the body. So, like, I want you guys to be aware of that. And it's okay to just be like, all right, it didn't work out this time. I'll try again next time. All right.
Yes. So that's the mindset issue I mentioned earlier in the show, Vanessa, is that like your mental space is so important. If you're totally stressed out and you're like trying to force this fast for, you know, muscle your way through it, that's not a good way to do it. It has to be there, not that it's easy, but there has to be like, I'm okay. You know, this feels helpful. I'm gonna be fine, right? If you're in like a freak out mode, that's only just gonna really exhaust yourself. So you want it has to be where like I'm wanting to do this still. Yeah. There's enough of me that says this is a good idea. My body is maybe a little uncomfortable, but you know, that's because there's maybe some detox happening or whatever, but it doesn't feel like too much. Yeah.
If it feels like too much, that's your cue. You know, okay, I gotta make a change here. So,
I just want to share a quick little bit before we end, though, that in that book, Jason Fung's book, The Complete Guide to Fasting, I just was so astonished with this story that he told about a man who was, I think he was morbidly obese. He was like, I don't know, 300 or 400 pounds overweight. And he literally did not eat for, I think it was over a year, some astronomical number of days. And he
Wow.
was totally fine. He just drank water that whole time. I don't even remember if he took any vitamins, but he lost all the weight and was fine. And I'm thinking,
Wow.
can you imagine not eating for a year? Being
No.
crazy. But the body is able to live on its own fat.
I was
And
just going to say he has all that stored fat that he's burning and he's using those. So that fat is an energy source that's literally free energy on your body, actually, because people don't really understand that when it comes to leptin. It's like actually it's the body is that it's the body's like energy conductor, like to telling the body like, okay, well, how much fat do I have in my body, right? That's what the body lets it know. That all that fat that you have in your body is just stored energy. That's what it is, right? That your body can use. So he tapped into that and he used that stored energy. Like, I mean, I would think he would need some vitamins or minerals,
I
but
know, I can't remember if they use
yeah.
supplementation. I'll go back and look, but
Yeah, now I'm
don't forget
curious.
that the body's able to convert substances. There's
That's
I
true.
forget what's the name of that is. Do you remember, Vanessa? But it can create, like, if it doesn't have enough this or that vitamin or whatever mineral, it can create those. It's very interesting how the body can do that. So
The
just
body is
know
quite
that,
intelligent.
yeah, your body will adapt and figure it out, but you have to be super attuned to your body and really be able to notice and focus inside and sense, is this just something that is happening in my body that feels mildly uncomfortable, or does this feel like really distressing and I should probably end the fast? So you have to be attuned to yourself. You can't just focus on what someone else says. So you have to combine expert guidance along with the ability to really notice yourself. That's why if you're super busy and distracted, I would say it's not a great time to fast because you really need to be able to stay attuned to you know, how your body's responding.
Yeah, 100%. It's really a lot about listening to your body when it comes to this. So, something that we have to learn to do a little bit better, I think, in this society, because like you said, we're so busy, go, 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 modern paced lifestyle that we never even pay attention to any of the cues that our body's giving us. So it's really, really important. So, you know, we hope that this was helpful and helps give you some clarity around fasting. And, you know, you can decide whether this is something supportive or not supportive. It's not something you have to do on a healing journey for sure. I think you can totally heal without doing fasting, but I always recommend the circadian kind of lifestyle of the regular eating, which is really not a fast, but just the regular eating.
Yes.
So you can visit our website, you know, if you need support with diet, lifestyle, nutrition, homeopathy, we do the holistic, you know, approach, you know, we can guide you on fasting, you know, certainly if that's something that you're interested in doing, you know.
You have a group cohort coming up, Vanessa?
Yes, I do. Group coaching is coming up. We talk about fasting on this group cohort. That's going to come up in probably like mid to end April. Okay. So that's something you could check out. One-to-one coaching. I'll help you with personalized healthcare plans. I do that as well. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you can check all that stuff out. I have my Rebalance Your Rhythms course that goes over too. So lots of good things you could check out on my website, which is brightlightwellnesscoach.com. So you can check that out if you want to learn more about how to work with me. Heather, what about you?
Yep. And I have a group coaching program, or actually, so it's called the Quantum Resilience Community. Mm-hmm. So it's there's mentorship in there. And then we have obviously camaraderie, but I guide people through the basics of circadian rhythm and how that affects everything, mental health and all the ways that your body functions. And so it's the way that I can support people comprehensively. So quantumresiliencecommunity.com, check me out there.
Awesome. Yeah. We're here to support you guys, right? So mm-hmm. We hope you appreciated this podcast episode. You learned something, you know, and let us know your feedback. You can get us both on emails as well. Let us know there's a topic that you want us to chat about, and we'll be happy to do that, right?
Yep. Thanks All for right. tuning in, everyone. See you next week.
Thanks so much for joining today's show. For more information about Heather and her offerings, see her Instagram at Heather Crimson or go to her website at enlightenedmood.com.
And for more information about Vanessa's offerings, visit her Instagram at bright_light_wellness and her website at brightlightwellnesscoach.com. See you next week.